You're listening to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Now here's your host, Chris McPherson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Yes, I'm Chris McPherson alongside Fran Duffy. Fran, we are just, as we film this or record it, since we are technically not on video, 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season.
Yes, and it's I feel like the next 2 weeks are going to go by really slow.
Oh, I disagree. No.
No, I think it's going to be slow.
It's going to be fast.
I don't think so. Next week will be fast. This week's going
to
be slow.
The game's going to be here before we know. It's Thursday. It's not like a week-to-week game. It's not like you're going from a Friday or a Saturday to a Thursday night game.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's
the good thing is that we got college football Saturday, so we got that too. So that can kind of cut it in half.
That's the only thing you look forward to.
Cut it in half.
It's like just to the next little bit of football.
Well, that's the thing is you got the Eagles game Thursday, and then that long stretch before the next game, the 10 days before that,
okay.
We've got college football on Saturday.
Will you go see high school football in the meantime?
No, we have Temple Penn State at the Link on Saturday, so that'll be exciting. Real exciting.
No Cheltenham games for you?
No Cheltenham games for me.
I was just going to wait. If our producer, Brian Thomas, has the little crickets drop, that's where I was just going to go with the Temple Penn State one there. So, and we also have Chris Stevens. He doesn't have the microphone right now. We might hear from him a little bit later on in the show.
It's getting toasty in here.
Oh, it is getting a little warm here. Where's Will Smith's summertime?
Perfect.
Wow. Yeah, you got to stay tuned just a little bit longer to find out what that's all about. It has to do with the interview who this week is receiver Rashid Bailey, the rookie free agent who born and raised in Philadelphia, the Roxborough section, went to Roxborough High, played his college ball at Del Valle, not too far from here, and now he's trying to fulfill a dream and make the final 53-man roster. I figure this would be a good week to bring him on because they're going against the New York Jets, the final preseason game, the annual exhibition finale, so to speak, with New York, which is a little different this year because of the fact that they'll play them early on in the regular season, but you're not seeing too many of the players who are going to be suiting up on Thursday against the Jets in a regular season.
Yeah, no question. So I don't imagine that we'll see too much in terms of scheme, and you know it'll probably be a lot of what we've seen so far this preseason where the Eagles are running the same plays over and over and over in one game.
With success, though.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
It's been the same thing.
Not going to argue that.
But they are the most prolific offensive team thus far in the preseason. So, again, thank you very much for listening, downloading, however you're enjoying this podcast. Please, if you haven't already, subscribe to whether it's iTunes or Stitcher, and also rate and comment the podcast. We greatly appreciate it. We're going to get into our three now in just a little bit. As I said, Rashid Bailey will be the interview. We're going to go through some of the roster battles in our enemy intel section this week instead of there's no need to preview the Jets. We're going to do that in a couple weeks when the Eagles play them in the regular season. We'll just do some of the key battles to watch on Thursday night. We're also going to do, for our game time segment, some season predictions. Who's going to make the playoffs? Who's going to advance to the Super Bowl? Are we going that far?
We'll go that far.
Who's going to win the NFC West?
Who's going to win the NFC West, as Chris Stevens put it so eloquently.
And some good questions in our mailing it in segment, so we will save that for last. But first up, as always, three and out.
One, two, three, three.
Three is a magic number.
Three, three.
Now it's time for three and out.
Well, we're still waiting to find out who the third member of the podcast
That's right.
Today. So obviously we have our two men behind the scenes, but originally, it was three and out because you have three co-hosts, 3 points of view on the game. Right now, it's just Fran and I. So, Fran, why don't we just
stuck with us.
Yes. Stuck in the middle with you.
Yes. Stuck in the middle with dudes. I put it out there just to beat us to the punch. So it's just the two of us. But there's a lot to talk about from Saturday.
To talk about. I will take the offensive side of football.
Sure, why not?
I take the low-hanging fruit, as always, because you've gone through the tape. Okay.
Yes.
I'm not going to be diving into the All-22. I will edit your Eagle Eye piece later on this evening. Again, this is Monday afternoon as we're taping this. So by the time you download this, you'll probably have already scoured and enjoyed the Eagle Eye piece, certainly. I want to start with the offense. The biggest thing, obviously, everyone's going to focus on Sam Bradford, and rightfully so, with his 10-for-10 performance, 3 touchdown passes, was brilliant in the pocket. You know, took that shot on the Trey Burton touchdown pass, but got right back up. I personally really enjoyed the little fist pump
he gave. Oh, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was great.
Get the heart pumping a little bit.
The touch pass on the wheel route to Darren Sproles, a thing of beauty. But it's just amazing to me that you have all these new pieces in place, from Bradford at quarterback. You go to running back where you have DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews. You have receiver, you have Nelson Aguilar in the mix. Most of the other guys are the same. You know, tight end Trey Burton is working in there with Zach Ertz's injury. Two starting new offensive linemen, Alan Barber and Andrew Gardner. Even though there's all these new pieces, this offense has been running seamless, efficient. It's been the most dynamic offense in the league this preseason. No questions asked. Over 39 points per game. They lead the league in yards. I mean, just across the board, they've been flat out dominant. And it's amazing to me that they've been able to do this despite all the changes. And you might say, well, some of it's the backups. True, but you look at that game on Saturday night against the Packers, the Eagles led 25-0 at the end of the first quarter, and that's against Green Bay's first-team defense.
They're on their way to 100-burger.
I mean, it's, you know, again, you want to keep things in context because it's preseason.
Yes.
And it's important. Still, the fact they were out there and executing the way they were, Bradford had, you know, three drives, the most that he's had this preseason. He's only had four drives and all have resulted in touchdowns, but still, he hasn't had that much game action. Just how quickly that this team has been able to gel together to me has been simply remarkable.
Well, it's funny you say that because a couple weeks ago, Bill Davis had a press conference and he talked about the same thing on the defensive side, how they've had a number of new pieces. And he talked about when they first were putting the system in a couple years ago, when Chip Kelly first got here and they were putting in new systems on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. The staff wanted to make the scheme as coachable as possible so that when they brought new guys in, it was really easy to teach them all the new terminology and all the new schemes. And it seems that that's the way it is on the offensive side of the ball, too, where you see all these new pieces in the backfield, out wide, up front, and at quarterback, and they're able to still keep going, keep chugging along, and produce at a very high rate.
I mean, but it all starts with the quarterback.
Absolutely.
It absolutely comes down to Sam Bradford getting the job done, running the offense. I love the way the running game was integrated in there.
Yep.
You have all three of the backs getting touches early and often throughout the course of the first quarter there. You know, DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, whether it's on the ground, through the air, it's you don't know who you're defending at any given time. The Eagles can just rotate guys, roll guys in and out seamlessly with no problem. It's just going to make it that much easier on the quarterback because, all right, if you want to sell it to stop the running game, well, who are you going to stop on the perimeter?
Right.
You got Jordan Matthews. You're going to have Zach Ertz. You have Brent Celek, who made an impact. Trey Burton stepped up this preseason. You know, Nelson Aguilar. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and it's remarkable just to see how quickly it has all come together for them.
Well, and that's the beauty of the Eagles' passing game is that it comes down to concepts, and it doesn't matter who is lined up where or, you know, not just, you know, obviously who is in those spots, but then where they're lining up. It could be that they're running a three-man concept and there's a flat route involved. It could be a tight end in the line of scrimmage. It could be a third slot receiver. It could be a back out of the backfield. Whoever it is, it's still, you know, they're running all these very similar concepts, play in, play out, from different looks with different personnel groupings. It just makes it hard to stop defensively. But offensively, hey, you just know it is the same. This is the same concept for the quarterback. They know, okay, here's my first read, here's my second read, here's my third read. And it's just really fun to watch.
It's also amazing how the offensive line, which was much maligned early in the offseason, a lot of people questioned the decision to, you know, release Evan Mathis, an all-pro left guard. They already parted ways with Todd Harriman's. You obviously have your three building blocks, the guys who are locked in, Peters, Kelsey, and Lane Johnson. But this was an offensive line that dealt with injuries last season, which in some ways you might want to consider a silver lining because you saw guys like Andrew Gardner and, you know, Matt Tobin. These guys were able to get some game experience that otherwise they might not have been able to. But still, you're trying to replicate what you had back in 2013 when you had the same five guys for all 17 games, including the postseason. But so far, Barber's done a phenomenal job at left guard. Andrew Gardner, I think, is much more athletic than fans and analysts want to give him credit for. He's filled in nicely there at right guard.
He's definitely taken the next step.
This line has quietly come together, even though there were a lot of questions about it overall going into this training camp.
Yeah, and I think there's still questions about the depth, and they've talked about it after every single game.
Certainly.
I've talked about, you know, there's too much pressure up front, or there's too much penetration in the run game. But those starting five, I mean, all five of those guys have played at a high level. Alan Barber's moving people up front. They've been consistently keeping a good pocket for the quarterback, whoever's back there, whether it's Sam or whether it's Mark Sanchez. So you have to be happy with how that starting five is played up front.
I would say if you looked at most teams, the depth is going to be a mark.
You can't have depth at every position.
No.
You know, they've got great depth at a number of different places this year. And if you look to where this team looked like 2 years ago when Chip Kelly first got here, I mean, it's night and day in terms of the depth at each position and what they're looking at. You can't have depth everywhere. You've got great players that are going to be cut over the next couple weeks, and it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
From your point of view, from a scouting standpoint, what's the most important position to have depth at?
On the entire team?
You know, it's funny. It's funny because...
On the entire team.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because last year we said, oh, they've got great depth at so many different positions, you know, receiver, and you know, we felt good at about a number of different spots. And the couple of spots that we were like, we're not sure, inside linebacker and offensive line. And both of those were put to the test last year. You saw the ups and downs in the O-line. The guys were coming in, coming out. I thought some of the young guys fared well. You saw some good things from David Mulk. You saw some good things from Gardner. You saw some good things from Tobin as well before he got hurt. But then you look at inside linebacker, and now you've got those guys that have all been able to come in. You knew coming into the year that you could rely on Emmanuel Acho. We saw some good things from Najee Good 2 years ago before he got hurt. So it's interesting how you could say, oh, well, you know, what are the most important positions? Every position is important because once you lose that one guy
up
front, you can get exposed. That's the thing about this league. So ideally, you want depth everywhere. I think ideally what this team wants is they want to bring – just like on the defensive line where at any point you could see – of those three guys, Fletcher Cox, Sed Thornton, and Benny Logan, you might see Bo Allen in there with Sed and Fletcher. You might see Taylor Hart in with Fletcher and Benny. You know, they're going to rotate guys in, you know, at will at all these different positions. I think that's the plan.
So defense.
Defense.
That's my salvo on the offense. Again, you know, phenomenal performance against Green Bay, but just how quickly that unit is gelled together.
Yeah.
Has been probably the most eye-opening thing for me, I would say.
Yeah, and the defense has gelled together really, really well. You look at, you know, obviously up front, it's going to be a broken record with me, these three guys up front, and then the guys coming in behind them as well. That's not broken. Well, maybe it is. I mean,
I'm just scratched. I was scratched. That was a scratch record there.
Look,
yes.
He's trying to do live drop.
I'm trying to do the live drop for you. Yes.
You set the bar very high last week.
Well, that's what you did last week.
Pushing the chips in. That's right. So that's good. That's good by you. But no, I mean, you know, you look at the defensive line and the talent they've got up front. That goes without saying. And then you look at what the thing that impressed me this week was you look at some of those backups of outside linebacker. You look at Vinnie Curry. You look at Brad Jones, who has been cross-trained inside and outside. I thought Brandon Graham had a really good game against the run. So I think if you bring those guys along and you can get to the point where they're able to bring in Jones, where they're able to bring in Vinnie Curry, where – you know, we can imagine if it's going to be Kiko that could rotate outside or Kendricks that will rotate outside at times in certain packages. If they're able to do that, I think that they can do some of the same things they did a year ago where you had Trent Cole and Connor Barwin as your bookends and you're able to rotate Brandon Graham in at will and get those guys some breathers. But in the secondary, I thought they were sound again. Walter Thurman with the pick six with some pressure up front. Really excited just about this unit overall. I mean, I'm really anxious to see Kiko in game action, whether it'll be this week or whether it'll be week one.
We were debating this on the postgame show, Ike Reese and Ike was like, there's just no reason to put him out there.
No reason.
It's, you know, I was trying to say, look, the guy hasn't played football in
a
year.
Right.
Full season.
Yeah.
Do you at least just give him a handful of snaps? Give him a series just to at least know what it feels like again? And Ike's like, look who's going to be up front. You're not going to have any of the starters. You're not going to have the guy alongside you that you will.
Yeah.
It's just – none of the guys that you're going to be playing with in a regular season game are going to be out there with.
I don't think if they do sit him, though, that would be for that reason. Because it's one thing if it's like Green Bay this past week where it's Aaron Rodgers and he has to be protected by an offensive line. He has to be protected by a running game. If he doesn't have those guys, that's going to affect him and you're putting him in harm's way. I don't know that if it's Bo Allen, Brandon Barron, Taylor Hart in front of Kiko Alonso this week, that would be a huge factor
no,
in him playing
true.
Or not. So I think if he's ready, I would imagine he'll play. And if he's not, then he won't play. I mean, I think it's kind of cut and dry. I would imagine that's how they'll treat it. But it'll be interesting. I'm really excited to see him play whenever it is, whether it's this week or against Atlanta.
Would you say, and this is something that I've had a conversation with a couple different people, when's the last time you were this excited, this optimistic going into a regular season? And a couple people have told me it's 2004. And it's like you're cautious.
2004?
Well, it was.
Wow. Man.
I mean, what year did you go into where? And I.
Well,
agree to an extent.
Excited for what, though? For Super Bowl?
No, just the optimism going into the season that you felt like they
Chip's
could.
First year. Chip's first year was pretty.
I don't want to say the dreaded words, but there was
dream
a team.
I know. No, I was thinking the same thing too.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, look, I was the first member of the dream team. I got here first day of training camp, the day before those guys were signed. I'm still here. Yeah.
Fran's the last guy holding down the fort in the dream team.
And Fran, quite honestly, you produced more than some of those acquisitions. So.
But I mean. I would think that year there was a lot of excitement. The Chip Kelly's first year, we come out and we played the Washington Redskins on Monday Night Football. There was a lot of excitement going into
that 2010
season.
Year, I mean, I know it wasn't expected with Michael Vick, but we end up making it to the playoffs.
Well, you started that year with Kevin Cobb.
Yeah,
though.
Right. That's the thing.
Right.
So that year,
going into
the anticipation was high, but I don't know if it was as high as 2004 or 2012.
No. I mean, so I was having this conversation with Rob Babick, who longtime graphic designer, does work for the Eagles.
Bookmobile.
And yes, he's done the Bookmobile designs. And he was just like, just goes back to T.O., that preseason game against Baltimore. And it's like, that year you knew. This year, to me, you don't know at this point. But it's just the fact that there were so many changes this offseason that it's all, so far, everything has worked. Every button that Chip Kelly has pushed has been the right one.
I think where you get that comparison, 2004, where you see T.O. score on an 81-yard touchdown first preseason game, is that we got a glimpse in the Packers game of what this offense can be.
Yeah.
It's now, what is it going to be through 16 games?
Correct. You want to see it for a full 60 minutes against...
BT dropping knowledge. He's trying to put himself in there to be the third
co-host. He wants
to
be the third co-host, indeed.
Chris Stevens is sitting here wringing his hands because he's going to take a step up into BT's role.
Yeah.
BT can slide in.
Chris can't wait because he's like, now he gets to touch the wheels of steel and get to the
Yep,
work.
That's right.
All right, so that's going to do it for three and out. It's time to welcome in wide receiver Rashid Bailey, the subject of this week's The Interview.
And now it's time for what you've all been waiting for, The Interview.
Wide receiver Rashid Bailey. The subject of this week's The Interview on the Eagles Insider Podcast. Rashid, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? Nice to be here.
You know, this is a very interesting week. It's a fourth preseason game. What does it mean for you going into this week, knowing that you're going to get an extended amount of playing time? You don't know at this point if you'll start or not, but with most of the starters out for the final game, what is it going to mean for you?
I mean, it's going to mean a lot to me, but at the same time, I'm treating it like a regular game. It's just a game. You know, I can't, you know, get too high, get too low. It's all about just going out there and just doing your job. You know, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Rashid, we wanted to bring you in here probably because you've met our intern, Chris Stevens.
Yeah.
Helps produce the show. And he went against you while you were at Del Valle. And Chris, unfortunately, didn't have the best of games on that day. Do you recall, you recognized Chris when you came in here.
Of course.
So even though he probably was down on the ground most of the time when trying to cover you, but... what do you recall about that game in particular?
Only half the time.
You know, I have a lot of respect for this guy, man. We trained in the summertime. You know, we went up against each other and things like that. And, you know, he told me some things. I told him some things. And it was a great experience. You know, I remember that game. I think I broke a couple of records that game. And I scored four times.
Four touchdowns, okay.
264, I think it was.
I think it was like 252 yards. I think I broke that record. Catches in the game, I think. I'm not sure, but it was a great experience, though. You know, not just, you know, going against him, but just the experience of just doing things I never see myself doing out there on the football field. And it was, you know, just working out.
So it was just having the opportunity to go against Chris, which brought out the best out of you.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those moments where I knew I had to go out there and just play football, and I wound up having a good game that game.
It's tough because it's like for Chris's position, it's like after a game like that, you're supposed to be, well, what am I supposed to do? At least he could say, Rashid's in the NFL.
Yeah.
Rashid's got a chance to make the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
At least that's got to make it a little bit easier on you, Chris, to say.
He's
taking it ahead. He's, no.
It definitely is. Rashid's always been a great player. I've had the opportunity to play against him every year in college. And he's a true testament of hard work because, you know, sophomore year, he wasn't even the number one receiver. And people don't know that about him. That I feel like people probably think, oh, he was always, you know, the main guy. There were other receivers who were considered better than him, but, you know, he worked hard. I saw him work hard, And man, by his senior year, he was bigger, faster, stronger, and he really made a name for himself. But he worked hard to get here, and I have the utmost respect to him for that. Now,
with all that being said, I saw that transition coming. Okay.
It didn't go my way. You know, a couple nice balls. He might have got away with a few elbows here and there.
The wind was blowing too.
You know?
That was crazy.
Is it true that other teammates of yours, Chris, were saying, "Oh man, Rashid, nice route, nice job out there." Meanwhile, you're like, you're turned around, spun in a million different directions, kind of like, "Where's my help?" And their guys are like sitting there, like, "Oh, nice job, Rashid, great job."
I was a little sour. The game plan was for me to shadow him and play him man to man, so I didn't really have much help. But yeah, they were overly friendly, I felt like, to him during the game.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. I mean, I think it was he was playing cover two or something. I ran a double move, and the guy came over. He was just like, "Oh my God, man, that was a great route." And I just scored
Dante,
on him.
That'd be Dante Thomas. Dante Thomas, everybody.
Chris, you are not sour. Not one iota about what happened then. What was it like in the pre-draft process for you, Sheed? Knowing that the Eagles had interest in you, you know, can you explain exactly how that all took place, and then how did you becoming a Philadelphia Eagle come to fruition?
I mean, it was tough. You know, the process was long. It was definitely hard. I remember when they came to see me, and during the season, about three teams came to see me, and you know, it was tough. And you know, I was fighting an uphill battle, and I've been fighting an uphill battle ever since I've been here. And I'm just, you know, every chance I get is all about, can I, you know, keep surprising them by my play? Can I keep doing those things consistently to make them keep looking at me and not just, you know, just peeking over at me? And, you know, the things I did in college and the things that I did to prepare, you know, I probably didn't have the best numbers coming out, you know, and things like that. And, you know, combine-wise, you know, pro day. But, you know, they saw something in me. They gave me an opportunity on, you know, after, you know, the draft. And you know, I'm here now. And I'm here to, you know, keep proving myself and to keep doing what I'm doing.
Rashid, you're a Roxborough native here in Philly. What does it mean to, you know, grow up in the city, be a fan of the team, and now actually play for the Eagles?
Well, first and foremost, I love this city. This city is amazing. You know, it was tough growing up here, but now I'm starting to see the city from a whole different side. I'm starting to see how much these fans really love this game, and the most the respect and the love and the support that I'm getting. You know, you get some negative things, but at the same time, it's mostly love. And I love this city for doing that and being behind me and you know, rooting for me. It's an amazing feeling.
How many family members do you have calling you, checking in on you? Is everyone pretty much, you know, it's around
tough.
The area?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It gets tough sometimes. And, you know, you're trying to make everybody happy, but you can't. And I've realized throughout my journey that, you know, you have to look forward and you have to keep looking forward and you have to block certain things out. You know, I've been doing a great job of blocking things out because I'm on a mission. My purpose is to play this game. My purpose is to affect people. And the more that I can keep playing this game, the more I can affect people. And I'm happy to, you know, still be here and, you know, to keep motivating people to, you know, do better at what they're doing, even if it's just a regular job. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be that guy to give hope. And, you know, I'm doing a good job right now, and I hope I can continue.
You talk to players. I've talked to many players over the years, and they'll say, "Oh, I don't read the media clippings. I don't watch the highlights. You know, I don't listen to sports talk radio." Is it more difficult because all your family and friends are here in the city, and they're listening to 94 WIP, they're watching Comcast Sportsnet, they're checking out PhiladelphiaEagles.com, and they're like, "Hey, Rashid, they're saying this about you. Hey, here's what they said about you on the broadcast."
Yeah, I get a lot of that. I get a lot of, you know, what they say on TV, you know, what people are tweeting about. You know, our media is very big here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got, you know, some of my friends and family members responding to things on, you know, Twitter or, you know, it's tough. But I have to block those things out, and I've been doing a great job because I've realized nobody can't help me while I'm in here. Only I can do what I have to do to put myself in that position to make this team or the practice squad or whatever that may be. And, you know, I'm just, you know, here to just keep going harder.
What was it like for you when you had the open practices? That was your first taste of being able to play at Lincoln Financial Field as someone who was a fan to finally be the player that the fans are cheering for instead.
Speechless. I was, you know, I got out there and, you know, for a second, I felt myself looking up instead of looking down. And I remember when I was in the that stadium one day and, you know, watching a game, I think it was a Redskins game, and I was sitting next to my friend, And I said, man, I can play here. I can play this game. And slowly but surely, I'm looking up and I'm playing it. And, you know, it's a true testament. It's a true story. And, you know, like he said earlier, you know, I've worked hard for this. And I'm not saying I deserve this, but I'm saying I've worked hard. And if God keeps, you know, blessing me with this opportunity, I won't let him down.
How old were you when you came to that game? Do you recall?
It was about 2 years ago.
So you were in college. You were at Del Valle.
I was at Del Valle.
And at the time, you would say that dream to friends and family, would they be like, come on, Gide, you know, you're at Del Valle. Look at all the factories they're producing. Look at all the D1 schools that are producing top flight talent. Did you have a lot of people kind of, you know, almost telling you no when all you've been saying is, I can?
That was one thing I never did. I never said I was going to the NFL. Never. Only said to one person. I had a close friend that I always told all my things to, but I would never post on Twitter. I would never post on Instagram or on any of those things.
Yeah.
I was never that type of player, that type of person who says, you know, league bound or NFL and stuff like that. All those things were just kept in my head and just said, okay, if it happens, it's going to happen. And, you know, I never held myself to expectations so high like that, because once you set expectations so high like that and it don't happen, leave yourself upset. So that's why every single game I go out there and I don't expect anything. I just go out there and just play football.
So where's that mindset come from?
Growing up here in Philadelphia, going to college, seeing different, you know, wanting to be different, you know, seeing so many things happen throughout my life. And, you know, I've matured so much since I went to college and, you know, I became a man and things like that. And I listen. I don't just talk. I listen to hear what people say. And I analyze different things and situations. And I say, okay, how can I put myself in a better situation? And when they didn't, I have to keep doing those things. Okay, what didn't that receiver do to make himself great? What didn't that quarterback do to make that perfect read? So I got to keep challenging myself to be smarter, to be a better person, and to keep leading and to do what I do best, play football.
Are there receivers in the locker room that you've latched onto? Or maybe not just receivers, veterans. There are so many here on this team that you've kind of followed in their footsteps to say, I need to emulate this guy if I want to be in the NFL.
Of course, you get a lot of, you know, people that you talk to and stuff like that. But the one person I can honestly say that I truly do emulate, number 81, Jordan Matthews. I mean, that guy.
He's a second-year player. It's amazing.
He's a second-year player, and he feels like he's been in the league for a long time. And that guy, he really pushes for me, and he really pushes me to be better. And I watch him, and I analyze him, and he's always trying to make me better. And I mean, he always get he even when I'm down, he gives me confidence. Sheed, you good. Do what you do best. Catch the ball. And, you know, he always bringing me up. And, you know, I follow after his footsteps. And I can honestly say that. And you have to follow before you lead. So, right now, I'm following.
Who was that for you at Del Valle, at Roxborough High? Who were those people before you that kind of were your mentors, the people who led the way for you, so to speak?
You know, I had a bunch of guys, you know, especially, you know, in college, I had a group of guys where, you know, it was a receiver group, and I watched what they did. Like he said earlier, I mean, they were better than me, and it hurt. And I watched them, and I said, okay, what doesn't that receiver do? What doesn't that receiver do? And what doesn't he do? And I'm going to put it all inside of me, and I'm going to do it better. So that's what I did. And, you know, I was a competitor. I never wanted to lose. I never wanted to be that guy that was just a little speck in the corner. And that's why I fight so hard here. Because when I came here, it was like, okay, this local kid's coming in. Okay. And I had to keep proving myself. And that's what I love. I love being in that mouse in the corner that you trap in the corner. But one day that little mouse, he's going to become a rat. And I ain't going nowhere.
When you first got here, what was the adjustment like? Because offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur has said throughout training camp, when she first came here, eyes were wide, you know, he was just thrown into the offense, trying to learn like everyone else. Now you don't see him making any mental mistakes out there on the field. What was that initial transition like for you, and how did you get up to speed so quickly?
Oh, it was tough. It was tough because I never, you know, experienced an offense like this, that this tempo and the signals and stuff like that. And, you know, it was a big adjustment, but I slowed it down. Kept hanging around 81, Jordan Matthews, teaching me, learning.
Do you like nag him? Is it like one of those things like,
no, he's openly like, like wants to help me.
Okay.
And you know, I knew he was going to be that guy when I first signed with the Eagles, because he was the first guy that tweeted me.
Really?
And said, welcome to the Eagles, welcome to the family. And I knew since that day I can look to him whenever I need help.
Any consideration for any other team? Was there another team that, not that they can promise you a whole lot as a rookie free agent, but was there any other
team? Of course, there was other teams in the mix, but, you know, I'm here. I'm a Philadelphia Eagle right now, and that's all that matters right now. And I'm just here to, you know, take full advantage of my opportunities.
Mm-hmm. First preseason game against Indianapolis Colts, that one-handed grab. Can you take us through what it was like? Because I know a lot of that is just natural, God-given talent.
Yeah.
But at the same time, knowing that you don't know how many opportunities you're going to have in a certain game, that you got to make the most out of them, you have a chance to wow the coaches and the fans and everyone else alike, and you're able to do that with that amazing catch.
I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, it's something that you just keep doing things over and over again. And the one thing my niche is catching the football. And the one thing I can honestly say is that I want to say on air right now, it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be scared, because when I'm out there, I'm scared. I'm scared that I'm going to fail. I'm scared that I'm not going to be good enough. So every opportunity I get out there, listen, I'm out there. I just want to make a play so bad, because I don't want to fail. And I'm just going to, you know, keep doing it.
I don't know if that's really scared. I think it's just acknowledging that the will to not want to let your teammates down, not let yourself down, I think is greater than anything else, that you care that much about it.
Yeah, I do. And I'm so passionate about this game. And, you know, to be here with my city and, you know, playing for the city, it makes me even more passionate, because I can't let these fans down. They count on me.
Sheed, final preseason game's coming up. What is this week like, knowing that you've already seen some of the guys in your position group be released, guys like G.J. Kinney, Mike Johnson, some other guys, Josh Reese? What's it like knowing that cut down to 53 is on the horizon?
It's tough. Came in here yesterday, saw a couple of guys going. Saw some templates on top, you know, the name going.
In the locker room, yeah.
It's tough. But I'm mad. I'm so mad. I just want to go out there and I just want to make a play so bad. And, you know, that's what keeps me going. You know, my anger, I want to be the player that I know I can be. I don't want to see myself fail. So, you know, this game means a lot, and we'll see what happens.
I hope fans tune in, because I know a lot of fans will say, oh, this is the fourth preseason game, but you get to see guys like Showtime Sheed over here.
It's on the line.
It's on the line. Live jobs on the line. Sheed Bailey, wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
We're pulling for you. Hopefully, you know, sort of like, can we put Chris out at corner, Chris Stevens out to play defensive back for the Jets this weekend, and maybe, you know, a little four.
I'm holding him this time.
Knock some rust off. He's not scored. He didn't forget that. Well, I would have thought you would have done that after the third touchdown.
Oh,
you played
it was only
him.
Two. It was only two.
I think it was two.
Two on him.
Two on
Fair
him.
Enough.
Two on him.
Fair enough. Rashid Bailey, thank you very much for joining us here as the interview on the Eagles Insider Podcast.
Time to get ready for game day. It's time for Enemy Intel.
Should I start humming a little Frenemy Intel?
Yes.
Frenemy Intel.
Can I just say before we get into this segment, I was in the room for the interview this week. How quickly did Chris Stevens throw his teammates and coaches under the bus to Rashid Bailey? Like, it was like in an instant he was giving up names. Like the lights got hot and Rashid Bailey was
it's like the interrogation room.
Yeah, it was an interrogation room.
Police interrogation. All right, who was the accomplice? All right, it was Dante.
No, it was like the police brought him in and said, "Hey, Chris, I didn't do it. It was him. It was him." You know, he indicted the guy before we even got into the.
If you were in the mafia, you'd be sleeping with the fishes. Like Stevens would be. They'd rat him out and he'd be done.
Oh man,
what was the kid's name?
Dante Thomas.
Yeah, I remember.
I gave you another opportunity.
Was
to
your brother?
Bullet.
It was your brother, Brian?
Name my brother. No.
The one thing I was thinking of when you're watching an athlete do something amazing and you're just in awe, did you guys see the highlight from the Little League World Series? I think it was actually the Pennsylvania team.
Oh, the kid that hit the home run.
The kid hits a home run and the pitcher just gives that look like, wow. So I'm guessing that's probably
it was Chris Stevens.
Yeah.
And he'll wear a wire. He will wear a wire.
He's bugged it, ladies and gentlemen. He's bugged.
Oh, I just feel bad for Chris Stevens' father, who's like, oh, my son works for the Eagles. He helps out with the podcast and Let's listen to it, and it's just him just...
I thought he was going to take that chin up. Nope.
He really had a chance to take the bullet, you know, no. show some responsibility. No, he...
Finger pointing.
There must have been a 225 bus coming, because he threw him right under that bus.
Oh. And it's tough because it's like I'm a father of two young boys, and it's like, you know... You're thinking about when they're going to start having these kinds of events happen in their life, their ups, their downs. Do you want to be so proud of them? But it's like when they falter, are you going to be supportive of them?
So do you believe in take the honest road and tell your kid exactly how you feel? Or do you kind of prop them up?
I will say this. Let me say this. Each of my boys have their own personality. So... you got to work with them differently. Coaching exactly. In the locker room.
Well, I don't know if, I mean, we're getting off topic, but.
Which is fine.
James Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he saw the participation.
I'm 100% in with James Harrison.
I'm
the participation trophy thing?
If I had the bag to make the all in, like Fran did.
Yep, all in.
We grew up with first, second, third, and then everything else was.
For me, okay, so I coached both of their little league teams, and we did participation trophies this year because they're 7 and 5. So to me, it's them.
Eight and nine. They're a little older.
It's getting them to have fun, enjoy it. So they want to do. My job is to try to get them to want to do it next year. So to me, that's where I feel like now. If you're starting to get to 10, 11, 12, like little league,
competitive.
I would agree. Yes. At this point, now there are parents who want to make it competitive at this level. It's like, look, the kids are barely, you know, they're barely able to throw the ball. You're trying to teach them how to swing the bat for the first time, whatever. I just want them to have fun, so they want to come back and do it again next year. So they get hooked on it.
I think if your
it's
kid,
a drug.
I think if your kid takes a liking and really wants to become good,
yeah.
Then you're a little bit, you know, you wait to get a little older, but you can be more honest and say, hey, here's the things I think we should work on. Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah.
And there's times where I would try to point things out to my kids, and when you coach them, sometimes it's a harsh thing because they don't want to listen to you.
But if you're casually with your kid and you know he's just not into X, Y, or Z sport,
certainly.
You just let it go.
Let him be his own
person.
Exactly. You know? So I embrace it.
But, you know, I know Chris was telling me about his dad, and he harps on some of his tough moments, but he's always supporting him.
Yeah. I know my dad would be – it's like if you weren't, like, flawless, it was like he was,
yeah,
my, like,
my
ripping.
Dad had been brutally honest. Yeah. Like, you sucked out there. So.
But you could have been 3 for 4, you know, or you could have, like – you know, rush for 99 yards and then in a game, and it would be like, well, you left a meal on the bone. A la Joseph Randall and DeMarco Murray. You know, it's like he would have been like that.
All I know is I like butter.
You like butter and toast?
I like butter and jam on my toast.
I had a lot of great drops just made for Chris. And I don't know if he sabotaged the mixer this week because all of a sudden the drops aren't working, but had a sizzling bacon.
It will make its way into
It'll find its way.
All right. Frenemy Intel
yes.
Here. We're not going to look at the Jets from a, you know, matchup standpoint. Let's focus on, you know, the 53-man roster, some of the position battles, some of the jobs that are still on the line. And, Fran, we'll start with the quarterbacks. Matt Barkley is going to start. We'll figure see a lot of Tim Tebow. You know, who's going to be the third quarterback? I feel like Matt Barkley has played well for the most part. I would say his first preseason game against Indy was his strongest outing. I thought he was hampered by some drops from his receivers in the last game.
Yes, no question.
You know, we all know that Tim Tebow brings something different. To me, it's almost like I think they know what they have in Barkley, and I think he's shown steady progress and improvement since he was drafted. It's do you want another quarterback like that on the roster, or do you want someone like Tim Tebow who brings the rushing element and is a different style
sure.
of player?
And that'll be the interesting thing. I mean, that's going to be what dictates the decision, you know, is what exactly do they want from that position? Look, if they want a guy that's going to do the things that Tim Tebow does from a two-point conversion standpoint, from a short yardage standpoint.
What did you think of that, by the way?
I thought it was great. You know, it's great because it gives you the ability to, you know, to practice some things that if he's on the roster, you're going to be able to do. You're going to make Atlanta plan for it because if he's on the team, you're going to have to plan for it. You know, and I don't think that, you know, look, the failed conversions weren't on him. I mean, Chip Kelly talked about it in his press conference today. They didn't get a great push up front on the first one.
Yep.
And the second one, The second one, the corner made a great play. It was the Malcolm Butler play from the Super Bowl. It was a very similar concept,
really?
Where he jumped it and jumped the route. So
okay.
It was very, very similar play. But it'll be interesting. What are the chances? And I'm just throwing this out there. What are the chances that there are four that both guys make it? Because if you want a third quarterback, and Chip Kelly's always said Tim Tebow is a quarterback, but if you want a guy that's going to bring to the roster what Tim Tebow does,
okay,
and you also want a guy that you're going to potentially groom for a quarterback moving forward, do you also keep Barkley too? I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying I agree or disagree, but
I just feel like you have Sanchez.
It's true.
In place.
Yes, no question.
And you're already fighting just to you're going to. If you're going to keep Tebow, I assume you're going to activate him on game days.
Right. That's the thing.
So now, are you going to have all three quarterbacks active on game day? You're taking away from special teams, and there are a lot of special teams. Fran, you and I have talked about this, off air, that there are a lot of special teams reps that the team has to make up for.
I was wondering about that coming into today. I actually wrote down.
He's got a sheet.
Down. Well, because you've got – listen to the guys that – and everyone talked about how great the special teams were a year ago, and obviously they were outstanding.
Yes. And they've been very good this preseason.
And they've been very, very good
very,
in preseason.
Very good.
I think they've been playing at a great level this preseason.
Outstanding.
Especially where people have the level of expecting what it was going to be last year. And Mike Mayock made a great point where he said, just because they don't have the results of what they had last year doesn't mean they're not going to be playing at the same level.
Sure, no question.
Correct.
But they're still getting great results and out of guys that we just haven't – Kenyon Barner has been playing great.
I think that people automatically just assume – because Dave Phipps back, because you have guys like Chris Maragos and Brian Braman and Chris Przinski and Trey Burton, guys that were big impact special teamers that last year, now we're going to be fine. But they've got to replace a lot of snaps from last year. I mean, you lose Brandon Boykin. You lose James Casey. You lose Brandon Graham, because you've got to imagine now that he's starting that he's not going to play a ton of snaps on special teams. Jeff Mayle, if he doesn't make the team, you lose all those special team snaps.
Brad Smith.
Casey Matthews, Brad Smith, Chris Polk. I mean, those are all guys that were – they made plays in coverage. They made plays in the return game. They made plays, in terms of blocking for the returns. Now, you bring in a Brad Jones. You bring in Jordan Hicks, who's now become a core special teamer, starts on all four units. Azeer Tutu is obviously going to play a big role. Eric Rowe has really gotten better each and every week. So will guys like Eric Tomlinson, can Eric Tomlinson make the team? Because you do lose a couple of those big guys. You lose the Casey Matthews. You lose Graham. You lose Casey. So they have some space there for another big to kind of come in and make an impact on special teams. Jerome Couplin, Ed Reynolds, Marcus, we know Marcus Smith, he started all four special teams in that first game against Indianapolis, but if he's healthy, will he be able to have an impact? It's going to be interesting to see. I'm really anxious to see how that pans out.
Sticking with special teams, running back, Kenyon Barner, Raheem Mostert. Do the Eagles keep four to begin with?
I think they keep four.
I think they keep four, and I think Barner is the leader at this point.
You think so? It'll be interesting.
I could go either way. Really?
I could go either way. Because here's the thing. And Barner, we both really, really, really like Barner, especially as a guy, one of the best guys we've met. Hashtag even better guy. But and obviously he brings value as a returner, but the Eagles have a lot of guys that can return. So I don't think you can bring him on just to be a returner. He's got to be able to help in other ways. I think that him and Mostert have both made some good plays as a running back. I think that Mostert has looked a little bit better, I would say, in the coverage aspect of special teams. He's played as a gunner. I thought he had some good reps on Saturday night against Green Bay. He showed one good rep I can remember from Indianapolis, actually, where he helped force that muff punt that they had down in their own red zone. I would say it's a toss-up right now. That's going to be the biggest battle to me on Thursday night.
I probably lean more toward Barner based on the flash plays he's made returning and on offense.
Yeah.
But here's what's crazy is that Mostert returns the opening kickoff 67 yards.
Of course.
So it's like, you expect a guy to really take control of a position, and then a guy underneath of him makes a splash play, and it makes it hard to really, really evaluate who you like.
Yeah, no question. I think it's a lot closer than a lot of people, I think fans would say, oh, it's definitely going to be Barner. No question it'll be Barner. Yeah. I think it's a lot closer than fans would
think. And we talked about in the broadcast where he was actually playing all units, not just doing his punt return duty.
True.
So it was something to evaluate, how did he fare in terms of playing kickoff coverage, kickoff return, so on and so forth.
That's a good point there by Fran and BT. A wide receiver, Miles Austin, against, figure Jeff Mayle, Rashid Bailey, I think Austin's in. To me, I think it's six at this point. You know, it's going to be – I'm looking at Jared Tutu's making it primarily special teams guy. A lot of people will think, you know,
I think he's a receiver. No question.
No question he's a special teams guy. You're going to have Riley Cooper, Josh Huff, Nelson Aguilar, Jordan Matthews. I think Miles Austin is in there, in my estimation.
And the question will be, because they kept six last year, the question will be, because those last two guys were met, there was two guys that you had on the back end, and those last two guys were Jeff Mail and Brad Smith. Both guys played special teams. Austin hasn't played any special teams.
That is something to consider.
That's going to come into consideration, I would think.
Yeah. Offensive line. See, we're pretty much, we figure, even though the coach won't say it, the starting five is set.
Yeah, I would think so.
It's really the backup spots at this point. Does Dennis Kelly make it over, you know, Julian Vandervelde?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you've got Tobin, who is a tackle guard. You've got David Mulk, who can snap, and you know he can come in and give you serviceable snaps as a center.
Did you hear the praise that Chip Kelly heaped upon Dennis Kelly today?
I did.
I mean,
he's a Dennis Kelly guy.
He is a Dennis Kelly guy.
No question.
To me, it was like, all right.
I mean, the question will be, is it eight or nine guys?
Yes.
Up front on the offensive line. And if it's eight, who is the eighth? Is it a tackle guard? Is it Dennis Kelly, or is it going to be a guard center and Julian Vandervelde? Mm-hmm. And then if it's going to be a ninth, is it going to be, because the ninth guy never active, so it's going to be a guy that's not going to play, you know, barring injury. Is it going to be one of the young guys? Is it going to be Malcolm Bunch? Is it going to be
Brett Boyko?
Is it going to be Josh Andrews?
Yeah.
You know, that's the question there.
I would lean toward Malcolm Bunch, I would say.
I would lean towards Malcolm Bunch as well.
All right, let's go to the defensive side of football. Outside linebacker, you know, we talk about who's going to be that third guy. Does Daheem Watkins possibly slide in? Let's throw it out there over Marcus Smith.
I mean, they haven't promised anything. You know, and I would say, like, if they say, oh, yeah, they haven't promised it, so you have to talk about it. I think Watkins has flashed. I think he's made some plays. Now, has he been enough where I'd be like, all right, yeah, he's definitely going to make the team? No, not at this point, but still got one game to play.
Is he on par with Chris McCoy from a couple years ago?
Chris McCoy.
Who everyone was like,
That's right, he has to make the roster. Chris McCoy.
Every year there's the guy.
Oh, yeah.
How did he not make the team?
Last year it was
Henry Josie.
Yep.
It was Chris McCoy.
A McDuffie favorite.
It was Chris McCoy a couple of years ago, and you know, I'm not saying they're gonna.
I think McCoy made more plays.
Okay, I think McCoy made
more plays than Watkins has. But Watkins has been a backup, I think, on two or three of the units in the second string on special teams. So he's shown an ability to contribute there. It'll be interesting to watch with Watkins.
I think inside linebacker. I guess the question would be: do you keep five? If I'm factoring the big three.
Right.
Kiko, D'Amico, Michael Kendricks.
And Jordan Hicks.
Jordan Hicks is your four. Does Najee good?
Right. It depends on if you factor. Now they kept, I believe the number was nine linebackers last year. They kept
Four inside.
It was four inside and five outside. If you depending on how you count Brad Jones, because I think we would both say that Brad Jones is that next guy, I would think.
He's like the primary. I think he's the number three outside
right.
linebacker.
And he's a core special teamer, so he's going to be active on game day.
Yes.
So
he can do both. Best thing about him is
No question. So if Jones is on and you count him inside, that gives you five inside linebackers. If you've got the two stars at outside, you've got Braman who's on the team.
Yep.
That gives you eight. So now you've got Marcus Smith, you've got Daheem Watkins, you've got Najee Good. You know, they're the guy. These are the guys that are going to compete for that. You know, one maybe two jobs.
Let's go to corner, and you figure Byron Maxwell, Nolan Carroll. They're set. You got Eric Rose in there. After that, is it EJ Biggers, Jalen Watkins? And you figure they'll probably keep five. So, you know, does Denzel Rice slide in there? You know.
Yeah. I mean, it was nine DBs a year ago. It was five corners and four safeties. So, just coming, you know, coming out of camp.
You know, Randall Evans, the, you know, sixth round pick.
Right. I would say that Watkins and Biggers are the two at corner. And then you have guys that you have Randall Evans, you've got Denzel Rice competing there as well. I mean, at safety, it'll be a competition. You've got Copeland, Reynolds. I mean, both of those guys, I think, are fighting for that one job. Both are playing on special teams, you know, in all four units. So That's going to be interesting. That's, I mean, other than running back, I think secondary is the one that I'm going to be paying the most attention to on Thursday.
It's interesting because Chip won't say who the third safety is. That's right. Like, now you figure Maragos is special teams.
Yeah. I think Maragos has played pretty well on defense as well. But I think
I'm just saying that it's right. Not to the point. You know that Maragos is making it.
You know Maragos is making it, but whether or not he's the third long-term safety. Yes. Right. Yes.
Krasinski, I don't want to say if he's a lock or not, but you figure special teams guy.
Yeah.
Again, very, right. Very good in special
Absolutely.
Teams. Absolutely. So that would be the battle to watch. So that's going to do it for Frenemy Intel here. Let's transition now to game time.
Get out your scorecards. It's game time.
It's time for the fun and games portion of the Eagles Insider podcast. It's time to do predictions. No reason to look at who's going to lead the team in receiving against the New York Jets or who will have the most sacks.
Sure.
It's time
season-long predictions.
Look ahead into the crystal ball and find out who will emerge and make it to the postseason.
Yes. We did this last year, but that audio was just obliterated due to technical failure. So,
of course. Failures of a different kind.
Yes, definitely correct.
It was definitely deleted due to failures.
We can't blame these on the peanut butter crackers this year.
What was my worst?
We all had Tampa Bay as a sneaky playoff team when they ended up number one pick. So
I think Minnesota. I think Bo had Minnesota.
Yeah. Minnesota wasn't too far off.
They weren't too bad.
They weren't too far off.
Minnesota was a year early.
And that was before we knew about Adrian Peterson missing. Right. Yeah, sure.
I think I had Cleveland making the playoffs last year, I want to say.
Yeah. They bought into Manziel.
Yeah.
Chris Stevens shaking his head.
Yeah. Why don't we start with the NFC West on our sheet? It says NFC West.
We have Chris Stevens put together these topics, and we said, all right, well, who's going to win divisions? Who's going to win MVP? He put down NFC East, and then he put down NFC West, and then that's it. It ended. So thank you.
Do you want to start with AFC just because I think
let's go AFC. Let's speed. We'll speed through these and kind of get through them real quick.
All right, my division winners.
Yes.
I still think the Patriots are the cream of the crop.
I agree. Yep, AFC East.
I think it's going to be much more interesting. And at this point, Brady could be placed back into the NFL, could be out there week one.
Yep.
Don't know at this point.
Until someone beats them, you got to
keep I'm going with New England. It's fine. In the North, I really like the Bengals. This year to come out. Mm. A lot of weapons on offense, strong offensive line. Andy Dalton is Andy Dalton. Think they're stronger with the D-line. Think Geno Atkins is going to bounce back. I like the Bengals there to win the North.
Yeah, I really struggle between the Ravens and the Bengals. The Ravens are always that team where you're like, I don't know, this could be the year they fall off, but then they always find a way to win 10 games. So
yeah.
I would say Bengals will win, but Baltimore, I think, might go farther in the playoffs. Sneak in as a wild card and then go to Cincinnati and beat them in Cincinnati.
Pittsburgh's going to be interesting, too. Pittsburgh is going to have one of the most explosive offenses.
You just worry about the defense is the only
thing. That's the question.
That's the thing with that, which you're not used to saying with the Steelers.
Yeah. Let's go out west. I still think Denver, even though I think this is going to be a much tougher division. It's going to be tougher sledding this year. I still think Denver pulls it out.
I think the Chiefs would be the chief rival to them in terms of taking over that division. You've got Jeremy Maclin, you add to that offense. Another year now in Andy Reid's system. The defense is always going to be pretty good. So I would say the Chiefs would be the biggest rival, but I would agree that I think it still is Denver on top.
I actually have KC as one of my wild cards.
There we go.
So I'm with you on the Chiefs.
All right. So what do we got for the South?
I think it's Indy.
I think it's Indy, too.
I think it's Indy.
Yeah.
I think Houston's going to get there, maybe probably next year.
Right.
It's if they have the quarterback. That's obviously that's what it is.
No question. Now,
does Aaron Foster come back? And
yep. And was such a big part of that offense last year. That's a tough loss for them moving forward.
Wild card. I mentioned Kansas City. I'm going to South Beach. I'm going to Miami Dolphins.
I would say Miami is a sneaky team. I wrote them down as well.
I think Tannehill is a good quarterback. They're going to be competitive, I think, in the AFC East. I think Ndamukong Suh.
Sure.
It's a very, very good defensive line. They already, I have Cam Wake in there as well. I love Jarvis Landry from receiver standpoint.
Big Jarvis Landry guy.
I know you don't like their first-round pick, Devontae Parker, but nonetheless.
Correct.
He practiced for the first time on Monday, just to let you know.
Congrats.
They were celebrating in Miami.
There you go.
But I have the Dolphins and Chiefs as my wild cards.
All right. I have the Ravens and the Chiefs as my wild cards.
Okay.
I'll lead the charge of the NFC North, or in the NFC. We'll start with the North. We've got I still think it's the Packers.
Agreed.
You know, you have Aaron Rodgers still healthy there. NFC West, I think it's the Seahawks, and you know they've got, but obviously they add Jimmy Graham. The rookies this year, I think, are going to play a really huge part of that team. I think that Frank Clark has already been lights out for them this preseason. They're getting
trying to punch Phillip Rivers lights out,
from what I heard. Yeah, and Tyler Lockett has made an impact for them as well. Special teams. I think Seattle is going to be better as long as they can get some quality play in terms of pass protection from that offensive line.
I was tempted to put St. Louis.
Yeah,
I really, you know, they get a quarterback with Nick. They got the defensive line.
Yeah,
you know, outstanding.
The defense
talent.
Is crazy.
The defense is going to be outstanding.
The defense is very good.
The running game takes a hit because Trey Mason, he's going to have he's a hobbled hamstring.
Which is unfortunate. Yep. They got Gurley.
You don't know quite when he's going to be ready yet. But I feel like the pieces are in place for them to take that next step and contend. They had some quality wins down the stretch last year when they were out of it. If Nick can solidify that quarterback position, I think they should be in the mix. So I was tempted. I think San Francisco's taking a huge drop off. Nobody's talking about Arizona.
Yeah, you know, no one's talking about Arizona. That's right.
And the offensive line is not great. They don't have much of a running game still. Some people like Andre Ellington from a talent standpoint, but he's got to be able to stay healthy. The defense, they lost Todd Bowles.
Yep.
You know, that's...
It's a tough one. They lose Cromartie, too, so they're going to have to shift some guys around in the secondary.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
We'll look forward to when they come here in December, though.
That's right.
The Bruce Arians-Chip Kelly matchup.
It's always a good one. NFC South. This was a division that was much maligned a year ago.
All right.
7-9 teams, 6-10 almost, making it into the playoffs.
7-8-1 Carolina.
Yeah. So what are we looking at? I mean, to me, I think it's the Saints. I think that even losing Jimmy Graham, I think that they're going to get back to running the ball and playing more of a ball control type offense. I think defensively, they've got some guys healthy. I think they've changed around a lot of the factors that affected them negatively in the locker room. I think the Saints will come out and take that division.
I went with a different team, the Atlanta Falcons. I think that they've got the quarterback.
No question.
They've got an all-world wide receiver.
As much as Bo Wolf hates Matt Ryan.
Indeed. Doesn't hate him, just doesn't think that he's on the
He's a Matt Ryan hater.
But they got Dan Quinn to kind of solidify They got Dan Quinn to solidify the defense. They had Vic Beasley, who's bringing speed off the edge there. They were right in the hunt at the end of last year.
Yeah,
and I think it was defense, if they had won, it was like they were right there last year.
Right.
I do agree with New Orleans. I feel like it's almost like the last call for Drew Brees. Almost, it seems like Brandon Cooks is an electrifying receiver. The defense, I still think, is a big question.
A lot of murmurs that Garrett Grayson might be the quarterback next year, the third round pick from Colorado State.
Really?
Yep. But I mean, with Atlanta, I think that, and we'll talk about them more next week. But,
of course.
I think the two big bugaboos with them will be the secondary and the offensive line.
Great.
If you can get past those two areas, they just don't have the horses right now up front, in my opinion. And then in the secondary, I think they still want to add a couple pieces to get to what they want in the back end. But
neither of us taking Carolina though. To repeat,
no,
that's
correct.
The thing.
That's a very good point. So. We've gone through the NFC. I think we both feel comfortable saying that we feel like the Eagles will take the East.
It's after that.
Yes.
And to me, I'm going to start from the bottom, and I'll go Washington. I mean, we haven't touched on the whole quarterback situation. And I don't know if I've – this is my 12th season, I believe, covering the team. I've not seen anything like this where you have a guy that you figure is your guy, that's supposed to be your guy, and – they just don't want
anything to do. Seems like a long time ago.
Was it 7 picks or 6 picks they gave up for him?
I forget the number.
I think it was 6 picks and 8
whatever
players. They ended up trading down a couple times and getting more player like this.
That's the biggest thing to me. It's obviously there's a lot of turmoil down there with what's going on, but it's just all that they gave up for him, and now just to where things were. And I remember that, you know, he was drafted when Nick Foles was drafted in that same rookie
year. Yep.
And it was, I mean, we went down there for that game, and I was just in awe of how spectacular he was. And just
was it one incomplete pass?
Yeah, I think it was 14 to 15, something like that.
Something absurd. Both games, though, he was
just unbelievable.
Out.
But and it's not even just that they gave up all those picks, and then, you know, it would be one thing if he showed up in Washington and was just a flat out bust.
Like, you can move on.
Yeah,
you just move on.
But I mean, what you saw from that rookie, and again, they made things pretty easy for him in terms of what they did. They really kind of catered to his skill set coming out of college. Then he got hurt, and that kind of took you down this path that led us to where we're at right now. But it's crazy to see where we're at. You know, 2 years ago, everyone was the highlighting of the Superman and the Bert and Ernie socks and the big smiles and everything. And now where we're at now, it's crazy.
Less is more.
Yes.
Less is more indeed. Third place in the division, I go New York.
Yeah.
I expect the offense to put up a lot of numbers this year. Obviously, Odell Beckham had the phenomenal rookie season. Eli Manning in the second year of that system with Ben McAdoo. Offensive line, they added Eric Flowers, but there's still some question marks. It seems like Victor Cruz, he's not a definite go for week one. He's still hampered.
Right.
But the defense, a lot of question marks of that defense. The Pierre-Paul situation, I mean, they were already, I think, in trouble. The Pierre-Paul thing just adds to it. Secondary, I mean,
yep.
You know, Eagles fans complain about the safety position here. I mean, they are really struggling to find
yep.
guys who can just suit up and play at this point.
Sure.
Up in New York. So I think that didn't pull them down to a point where I still have them. Now, they could be a sneaky team that's going to give a lot of teams problems. And
I think I think they're going to take another step in that offense, too, under Ben McAdoo. So
yeah.
That'll be the thing to watch with them.
Well, where do you go for ranking-wise? Do you have Washington?
Yeah, four. Yeah. Did Washington 4. I would say the Giants 3, but I think Giants and Dallas are pretty close.
Close.
And how Dallas plays this year is going to be interesting because on both sides of the ball now. Because now they lose their top corner. How they play coverage wise? Will they play more man to man? Because they played a lot of man at the end of the last year. Will they play more man? Will they play more zone? If they play more zone, now they're going to have to rely on their rookie Byron Jones to step in and play at a high level, and he's nursing a shoulder injury. Offensively, they lose to DeMarco Murray, so now what are you going to do up front? You know, are you going to put more on Tony Romo's plate? Will he be able to handle it?
That's these a big
are
the question.
Questions. That, these are the things.
Tony Romo, the ability for him to carry the offense is the biggest question because their foundation last year, which, Fran, you explained multiple times in your Eagle Eye stories and on the podcast, just the fact that, you know, they trusted DeMarco Murray to shoulder the load on offense and, hey, Tony, make a couple plays each game, and he was able to.
Right.
We don't know if Joseph Randall and
Darren McFadden,
Lance Dunbar,
right.
if the trio there will be able to get the job done. Still a very good offensive line, certainly, but it all comes down to Romo. Now, defensively, I like the line. I think the line's going to be very good from a pass rush standpoint. I think it'll help mitigate some of the loss there of Skandrick, but that was a huge loss for them.
No question. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I mean, I feel we obviously feel very good about the Eagles and their situation.
No question.
Anything else prediction wise? Do you want to go so far?
Who's your MVP offensive player of the year and defense player of the year? Rodgers as MVP, Adrian Peterson is the player of the year, offensive player of the year, and J.J. Watt. I love Hard Knocks and just watching like how that guy prepares and everything.
Does he ham it up for the cameras, yes or no?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he does.
That's the biggest thing. Everyone wants to know.
I don't think he does.
Until 9, 10 o'clock.
But it seems like everyone that writes or talks about him always has these stories. So it seems
We talk to Marigo? Because Marigo works out with him up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Nick Rotundi, one of our producers, right. Actually went out with him. And he was very much that same guy when they were in the gym.
Yeah,
Nick was filming, so there was cameras there.
It's awesome. I don't know. I think that's him.
I think Luck will be the MVP. I think with all the weapons around him, you know, he's already kind of in that conversation to begin with. I know one question is, you know, could Sam Bradford be someone who enters that discussion if the Eagles are successful? I feel like the media perception with Sam will just be part of it is the offensive scheme, no matter how good he plays. Plus, I think you're going to have a lot of production from the running backs as well to kind of offset the potential, but
right.
Eagles have never had a 4,000-yard passer individually.
Yep. That's why I went with Rodgers, because you talk about the media perception, them losing Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb's got hurt the other night.
Yeah.
If they go and if they win 11, 12 games and he throws for 4,800 yards, I think he'll be the MVP.
I'm just trying to think outside the box. I agree defensive player of the year. You know, could someone come out of the woodwork and, you know, put together a 20 sack season to kind of enter discussion? Sure, but I'm just trying to think off the top of my head with the offensive player of the year. It's like you think of the guys who have the potential, like Le'Veon Bell with the Steelers, but he's missing a couple games
at least. Yep.
You know, if Odell Beckham has another sensational year like he did last year, I think he'd be in the conversation, obviously. But, you know, Adrian Peterson's an interesting one because
he's going to be in the limelight.
Because I doubted him coming from the ACL that he was going to be as good as he was. So this time around, I think I'm sort of like, all right, I expect him to be outstanding again.
Right.
But at some point, Father Time always wins. Is this going to be the year? Now, I think Teddy Bridgewater is a good quarterback. They got some nice weapons around him. So I think that's going to help it a little bit. All right, so I think that's a good look at the predictions. I don't want to talk about who comes out of the NFC. Obviously, because I'll say the Eagles.
Sure.
But AFC, does anyone unseat the New England Patriots?
I think if it's anybody, I would have to go Indy right now. And not as much because of the free agency period and things, because a lot of people are saying, oh, they got so. I just think that Andrew Luck is going to be a year better, and he's going to be a year more comfortable with that offense, with that personnel. They added a couple guys in the draft as well. I got to say that Indy, if there's going to be a team that's going to unseat New England, it'll be Indy.
I agree. I actually have them. I wrote them down as a team that comes out just because of how good Luck is. So that's going to do it for Game Time. Let's now transition to Mailing It In.
Captain, incoming message.
Please check your mailbox.
A new message has arrived.
And now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in our segment, Mailing It In.
The last segment here on this week's edition of the Eagles Entire Podcast, none other than Mailing It In. So the questions were around Twitter this week. Greatly appreciate it. First one, I don't even know it's really a question. One of the loyal fans, Oh Wow Hmm, on Twitter, who throws John into all of his names, wants to know about the sleeves with Sam Bradford. This is the Joe Dolan from FantasyGuru.com, who longtime contributor to PhiladelphiaEagles.com, former intern of ours. You know, he's been on me about the sleeves. So I actually have an interview request in with media relations to interview Bradford about the sleeves, because I don't want to just bombard him and be like,
you know, tell me about the sleeves.
Talk about the sleeves. Yeah, it's something that I'm like, you know, it'd be good for Sam because it will show off a little bit of his personality. You know, it's not just about the injury and this, that, and the other. But it's just so fascinating because you look at Oklahoma, you look at St. Louis, he wore tight sleeves. Okay?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, and I asked one of the equipment guys here at the Eagles about it. I was like, what is the deal with the sleeves? And I just got the story about how the jersey was delivered like the day or two before training camp. And it's like they hold it up and it's like a blanket that's just so big that they're just like, what is this all about? But it's what he requested. So I just want,
I'm going to be 100%. I'm going to give you 100 right here. I had no idea when Joe asked me about the sleeve, I was like, what are you talking about? And then I had to go back and look and I'm like, yeah, I guess they're bigger. Like, I don't know. I'm just bad with details, I think.
Well, you're watching the All 22.
That's too far away.
That is something you will not pick up in the All 22.
We watched them from the truck in the broadcast when they run out, when the quarterbacks run out, and I'm just like, my God, those sleeves look awful.
What? I mean, I didn't know. I don't notice.
They just don't look good.
It's
almost like he has a Bobby Hoying jersey on or something.
Yes. He's got the Jared Lorenzen hefty lefty jersey on. I had no idea. I'm like, all right, I guess they're bigger. I don't know.
I mean, just look at him and everybody else. I'm just like, what happened to his sleeves?
Yeah.
Like, does he have a replica jersey on or something?
They couldn't get the right size at times. So they're like, just go out there, Sam. Just go out there. We'll fix it. But he's playing so well that you don't want to fix it at this point. So we've taken notice of the sleeves. Let's see. This question here, Joe Celestro asks about, we mentioned this briefly earlier in the show, Daheem Watkins, could he unseat Marcus Smith as the third outside linebacker?
That's a good question. You know, have I personally seen enough? I don't know that I personally have seen enough, but the coaches are with those guys every day. They see him in practice every day. And that's what, you know, people kind of lose sight of is, oh, well, what did he show in these three preseason games? Well, what is he showing in the 20-some practices in mini camps and things like that? But it'll be interesting to watch. We got one more game to find out.
Seth Scott wants to know, if Zach Ertz isn't ready for the opener, could Trey Burton start? And I would say Brent Celek's the guy.
Brent Celek's the guy. If they go in 11 personnel and one tight end, Brent Celek's going to be on the field.
Yeah.
But if they go 12 personnel, Trey Burton will be on the field, and he'll be a starter.
Definitely, but...
I love Trey Burton, so don't get me wrong. It's going to be close to the team lead in receiving yards.
Who do you love more, Trey Burton or Taylor Hart?
Or Taylor Hart.
Ooh.
Probably Taylor Hart. I would say Taylor Hart, who made a couple more plays against the run on Saturday night.
Did a great job against the run.
Yes.
And the last one from our good friend, Bo Wolf.
Oh, Robert.
Robbie wants us to rank the backup quarterbacks in the NFC East.
Oh, that's such a Bo Wolf question.
Yes. So number one, without a doubt, speaking of Father Time, is Brandon Whedon.
Well, yes.
That kid can spin it.
I am being completely facetious, by the way. Yes. I just want to say it to tweak Bo there because he loves
Brandon Whedon.
Loves him some Brandon Whedon.
Next to Mike Bell, his favorite player of all time.
Yes.
And Danny Watkins.
That's right.
Let's see. So Sanchez to me.
Yeah, Sanchez is the best of the group, no question.
You know, even if I'm not drinking the Midnight Green Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I mean that's
which I serve to my kids each and every night.
I don't even think that your wife can argue with the fact that
even my wife had to admit, yeah, Sam Bradford played pretty well.
So did she say anything about the accuracy?
Yeah, it was better.
The 10 for 10 was
yeah.
Why wasn't he 11 for 11?
Exactly. Sanchez won. I would go Colt McCoy too.
Okay.
If you're going with him in Washington.
Sure.
A guy who I think could come in and run the offense, you know, competently. He's won a couple of games in the league. Nothing flashy. I go Whedon three. You know, he's been a starter in this league. Has the arm. Obviously, old man strength.
Yeah.
Helping him out in that regard. But I don't think he's going to make – I think Colt McCoy is not going to make the type of mistakes that will kill you.
Right.
I just think there might be a little bit more of an upside with Whedon. But, you know, if I'm looking for a backup, I just want someone to kind of just keep the ship afloat, so to speak. Like a McCoy, Whedon, and Ryan Nassib.
Ryan Nassib is unproven at this point.
And, you know, that's a former draft pick favorite.
That's right. Number one player in the draft class, according
exactly.
to some.
Exactly. So.
So a Bull Wolf favorite, was this a donkey whopping?
Yes.
Past game?
That's a good question. Yes, that probably would be.
Would that qualify?
I think that would qualify. He will appreciate it. He did text me and say, tell BT that I really appreciate the Kimo von Olhoffen reference.
Yes, he
so
loved
he
that.
Did say
I was watching Sunday Night Football last night, and what did they bring up? The Kimo von Olhoffen. They talked about the whole Carson Palmer getting hit by and I was like,
there you go.
I was like, I brought it up last week.
They've clearly listened to the Eagles Insider podcast.
Clearly.
Indeed.
And by the way, Khalil Mack is a beast.
Yes.
That kid can play.
I watched him at Buffalo when he was a true freshman.
I thought about it. They showed some Buffalo highlights. And France
saw
this.
He was really, really good.
Started playing football his senior year?
Yeah. That's why he wasn't recruited.
That's ridiculous.
Well, speaking of Buffalo and NFL players, we just saw him this past week, James Starks. My first college football game that I ever worked, Temple at Buffalo, the first game for Al Golden and the first game for Turner Gill, who was the head coach. Remember Turner Gill, the former Heisman winner at Nebraska, was the head coach of Buffalo before he went to Kansas. It was the first game of both their tenures. It was a 9-6. No, you know what? It was 9-3 was
Chris,
the final
you remember
score.
That game, right? 9-6?
It was a 9-3 final. It was 3-3 going into overtime. And James Starks scored a touchdown on a counter run. Something
you remember the
corner.
Play? That's
ran right in front. I was at the pylon. I was doing camera. I was shooting on the field. Ran right in front of me. And I said, James Starks, there he goes. True freshman running back at the time, former quarterback. Good player though in college.
So, well, I think it's been a fun ride.
That it has
covered a lot of topics here.
Yes,
in this edition.
This will be a long one.
Eagles Insider podcast. So, thank you very much if you stayed with us throughout the entire show all the way to the end. Give a little shout out to Rashid Bailey. Great interview. Thoroughly enjoyed getting to chat with him. And, you know, it's guys like him who you pull for.
Yeah. In his last stand-up character, you know, stand-up guy. Doesn't throw former teammates or coaches under the bus like some of the guys he went up against in college.
Very passionate about his job.
Very much so. So you have to have a lot of respect for Rashid Bailey.
Toast any final words?
No, no questions,
now
please.
Shy,
no questions.
Now he's shy and humble. Look at that.
Let's go Albright football.
There you go. All right. Keep it within 42 this year against Del Valle.
There we go.
So for our producers, Brian Thomas, Chris Stevens, my co-host Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Once again, please subscribe, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher, and make sure to rate and comment. So thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week to preview Monday Night Football against the Atlanta Falcons.